Hi, and welcome to Revolution Radio. You're live here with me, Paul Stevenson, and I'll be with you for, the next 2 hours. That's 7 to 9 p.m. Here in the UK, 2 to 4 Eastern Standard Time, and I think that's 11 to 1 in Pacific Time, wherever you are around the world. Welcome to the show, and I hope you had a great week. I'm sure the majority of you are looking forward to the weekend. And I have... with me tonight, I originally came across this gentleman probably about 6 months ago, and he's certainly got some very interesting information on his websites, and we arranged to have an interview. Originally, I thought it would be next week, but we just sort of got it together this evening and had a chat. So he is Ray West, and he is the creator and editor of – well, he's got two websites here. So one of them is big-lies.org. That's big-lies.org. And the other one is Nuke Lies, which is about, basically saying that nuclear weapons and the whole issue of nuclear weapons is BS. Ray, are you with me?
Yeah, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you loud and clear. Welcome to the show, Ray. Just for those who aren't familiar with you, when you look at your websites and the show the shows I've heard you do before, it's kind of almost like a one-stop shop conspiracy website. You've just got all sorts of stuff on there.
Yeah, it's grown over the years. I've added to it, and it's also deliberately designed to have all the stuff kind of up front, because I've found from experience that WordPress sites are difficult to find information on, so it does look a bit cluttered, but I quite like it. I always use a big screen to look at it, so I do my best to make it readable on iPhones, things like that. By the way, I've never heard your Revolution Radio before. I didn't realize how much. I apologize for not having a heavy beat in the background here.
You've got a what in the background?
I apologize for not having a lot of Beats music playing in the background.
I can't hear anything.
No. Anyway, well, I only heard of you quite recently. In fact, the reason I'm here is because you hosted both Dr. Joyce and Kevin MacDonald.
Sure.
And you seem to be, you're obviously clued up on this sort of stuff. So let me try and start at a sensible place here. I've got in front of me my website open, this biglies.org, of which Nuke Lies is a subset.
Just give a little bit of background about yourself. How long has the website been going? What inspired you to create a website like this?
Fair enough. Well, I did have a site which started about 1997, and went for a few years, and that was at the time that I discovered Holocaust revisionism, as I presume a lot of people did. It was.
You're not suggesting that the Holocaust didn't happen, are you?
Yeah, of course. your little joke. Yeah, but I mean, I didn't know before 1997. I think it was. I'm pretty sure. And
just on that point, sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, go ahead.
I know in Germany. I mean, you can be arrested for denying the Holocaust. In fact, David Irvine and others. Did Irvine serve some time for denying the Holocaust?
Irving. I got to know him actually at the time. I was living near London, and I wrote to a couple of prominent people, one being Irving, the other one being a chap who's I've forgotten his name. He's a Jew who turned out, in fact, to have been promoted from working in an audiovisual department. He didn't really have any entitlement to become a professor, which of course is what happens with Jews. If you say the right thing, you get promoted from nothing.
We just about have free speech still in this country, don't we?
Yeah, I think they're careful about using these laws, actually, because in case they seem too ludicrous. I mean, there's this woman at the moment, octogenarian, I think, in Germany, who has fallen foul of the law. I forget her name. But I don't think that she's actually been into jail so far. Irving was not jailed, not in Britain. He was jailed. There's some scepticism about this actually, but anyway, he appears to have been jailed in, I think it was in Austria, because he went there and there was a warrant out for him for like 10 years earlier or something. But it's a tricky road to pick along. And I think, people know this. I mean, they know, obviously Jews don't want to expose themselves. They want to keep this sort of stuff as secret as they can. And it must be causing potential you know, rips and tears in the sort of fabric, the fake fabric of Jews.
Yeah, I mean, my experience of talking about the Jews is that you may as well call them out directly anyway, because you may as well get hung for a sheep as a lamb, because I don't know where you saw the recent ADL list. You had people like Gavin McInnes on there and other sort of quite sort of moderate figures. And, you know, we've been saying this to these guys for ages. I mean, you're going to be a Nazi. If you're even remotely, you know, against the establishment, they're going to call you a Nazi and a Holocaust denier. So you may as well call them, you know, call it out in the first place. Because Jeff Gates said the same thing. You know, Jeff Gates. I interviewed him.
Jeff Gates? No, sorry, I didn't.
But he's done a lot of work on how the Israeli lobby basically control U.S. foreign policy, and he said he was careful never to deny the Holocaust. And eventually, they accused him of being a Holocaust denier.
Yeah, it's a tricky thing, but. It's what's to be expected, really. It's analogous to religious persecutions and having heresies and so on. Anyway, the nuke thing is later than that. I didn't realise in 1997 that... I knew at that time that AIDS was a fraud. I mean, that's quite well known. The AIDS issue, that was dated from 1984. That was another Jewish thing.
So that's BS as well, isn't it, AIDS?
If you have anal sex, you get diseases of all kinds, but they're not AIDS, basically. I mean, I've known that for years. I've known it so long, I forget that other people don't know it. And there are two types of revisionists, actually. One type gets a subject and sort of sticks to it. I still know people now who are active in campaigning against AIDS or trying to get the truth sorted out about AIDS. But I've got a different attitude. Once I've worked out that something is a fake, I go on, I see if I can find something else. The nuke thing was a lot later. It's more like 2008, and my website is a forum which I had to grab. It was the owner of it took it down after a year, and it is very interesting. I do honestly recommend it. Nuclize1word.org, and you will find a whole load of stuff. It is divided very conveniently into little sections. There are about 10 of them, I think. The first one is on. Let me see, I'm looking at it now. Welcome to Nuke Lies. Do bombs exist? Nuclear bombs exist? And there's part two. Part three here is nuclear scams in the past, and that includes things like the Manhattan Project, the Atom Mine, the Cold War, Jewish spies, the H-bomb, so-called, various missile projects, the neutron bomb, and Vanunu, who I regard as being just a fake. He's a Jewish fraud whose function is to keep the nuke thing going. There's also stuff about weapons of mass destruction. Anyway, this was basically 2011 to 2012. I've inserted some more stuff in red here and there. For example, there's a new Daily Telegraph photo from January 2013 of showing Hiroshima clouds. They were split clouds. It's not one great big one. It's all due to there's a sort of careful camera angles there. And Section 7 here is on doubts about nuclear power. Now, the start of all this was a chap called Roger Desjardins in Canada, who's really quite an important character, although he will never talk to anybody. He doesn't.
What's his name?
Roger Desjardins, Desjardins.
Is he a scientist?
I think he's still alive. I think he's something to do with electricity generation. I think that's what gave him the idea originally, but I'm not certain. But he started it.
So what is the evidence then? I mean, what's your angle about why nuclear weapons? I mean, obviously we've got an ideological, I suppose, for the sake of mass control and social control, but I mean, you've got the science aspect of it as well. I mean,
you've got to separate out into separate into the Jewish kind of angle on it, and then also world politics and money and fear and, you know, fear and terror, that kind of thing. The Jewish angle is quite interesting. This website has a lot of material on it. For example, most of the people were Jews from Hungary, like Soros. depending on your point of view, were expelled from
everywhere.
From Hungary in this particular Hungary was interesting because it had quite a lot of factories, and the chap who did the Manhattan Project was actually a chemical engineer. So to make his uranium hexafluoride and separate it out was a sort of expensive job for him. A lot of these people just went into it. It was a big money-making scheme. You have to understand that it was a huge money-making scheme. And all these things have been kept running for years. The Cold War is interesting because, as you must be aware, the USSR was run by Jews, just as the USA was, in a fairly hidden sort of way. I mean, obviously they both had their figureheads. I mean, Stalin being the obvious one in the USSR.
Yeah, sure. He was funded by New York financiers before he was just about to have a nervous breakdown.
In fact, I suspect that he died in 1953, and there's doubts about his death, not unsurprisingly. And that was more or less the time when the Russian H-bomb went off. This was the so-called Tsar bomb, which was not detected on any equipment for earthquake detection, and it probably didn't happen. Well, it didn't happen. It was just a fake. And I suspect that Stalin got wind of it and was not pleased. And that may have been connected with his death, although it's hard to know.
Yeah, so you said it's big money. I mean, we had Einstein, of course, and all that being involved with this. And it seems like it's a typical sort of, Jewish pushed through aggressive media campaigns and publishing scientific journals and stuff like that.
Okay. Well, I could have pulled you up there, really. Einstein was, in my view, a fake. There's a wide...
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Well, he was fake as a scientist as well. I mean, the Jews have got a history of imitating other people because they're basically not very creative. They're parasites. And Einstein, well, the technical stuff was copied from typically from mathematicians like Poincaré. Mm. But he didn't, in fact, take any part in the so-called technology of nuclear weapons. He was a sort of bystander. It's worth reading some of the books at the time. A chap called Junck, for example, J-U-N-C-K, wrote a book, which in fact I was recommended to read at university. I remember it took me years to get around to reading it. The other issues are atom spies. All of these were, Rosenberg and so on, these were all Jews, and the object of them was to pretend that America had secrets and pretend to pass them to the Soviet Union. It's really quite... I mean, once you see how it's done, it's pretty obvious. And Vanunu is one stage in that process. He had the palms of his hand had some message scribbled on them, and he showed it through a window of some vehicle he was being driven off in by Israelis. And the whole idea of that, Sunday Times, I think, sort of blew the story. And it was obviously designed just to pretend that Israel was nuclear armed, and of course they had to do something like that because nuclear arms need investigation. They need people to look at them. They had to sort of keep it secret and yet pretend, and at the same time make it a kind of open secret, which is a policy they've continued to this day. So everybody thinks that Israel is nuclear armed. I'd say, in fact, it's just all bullshit.
Well, nobody's, according to this conspiracy theory, no one's nuclear armed, are they?
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
I must admit, I have, when I first heard it, I thought, yeah, that makes sense, because no one uses them. I mean, they would probably have used them, would they?
I think you can assume they might well have done. The ones at Hiroshima and Nagasaki, incidentally, it's quite easy to prove that they were not atom bombed.
All right, go for it then, because I'm sure our listeners will be interested.
Okay, well, there are loads of bits of evidence. One is newspaper headlines. The newspapers at the time said that they were firebombed. There was no... The initial press reports were that... atom bombs weren't mentioned. They obviously took their time to get the story together. You can see on YouTube, there are some videos showing this. So there's the newspaper. There's also evidence. It was inserted into general circulation by a free copy of a New York newspaper. They published this thing free, and there's all these descriptions of horrific injuries and so on. I think it was about a year after it had been nominally been bombed. In fact, the Japanese themselves didn't believe it. I've heard stories of Japanese people telling Americans that they're mistaken. It wasn't atom bombed, and of course, Americans believe what they're told. If it's monolithic, if every person says the same thing, people don't generally feel any inclination to go against it. There's a similar thing with radiation. There are lots of scares about radiation, and of course they never really got their story together there, because, I mean, for example, Hiroshima is well known to be flourishing now. It looks completely undamaged in any way. There's certainly not sort of thousands of years of radiation damage. There's also evidence from the ruins there. If you look at the comparisons of Hiroshima with Tokyo after it was firebombed, it looks more or less the same. You know, the stone buildings are still there. There are large areas which were burnt because these buildings were largely made of wood. In fact, there's a theory that it was a deliberate land clearance operation, a bit like the Great Fire of London. You know, if you want to rebuild, an easy way of doing it is not, you don't want to pay off loads of people, you just kind of firebomb the whole thing.
Some of the buildings were still standing there, which if it was a proper nuclear explosion, they would have probably been flattened. But you do, even in the photographs, you do still see sort of concrete buildings with the windows out, etc., which would be consistent with the fire bomb.
Do you know the tram service got running within a couple of days of the so-called nuclear bomb? If you look at the photos which are supposed to show it, you can see there's some jiggery-pokery gone on there with the so-called mushroom cloud. It's either been pasted on it or inserted on it, or it's from two separate explosions. In other words, you've got one town burning and another town burning, and you just line up the aeroplane and photograph it with both of them there. But anyway, there's a lot of stuff in there about it. It's very, very reliable stuff. I'm a bibliophile. I've got a big collection of books, and one of them was a book written by Japanese school kids writing about Hiroshima, about 50 or 60 or something accounts of it. If you look through them carefully, you get things like people opening the door and going out, and there's a burning building. This is Hiroshima right underneath where the thing was supposed to have been bombed. It's clearly not what they make out, even in these reports by children. I think as with the Holocaust, if you get a story, a narrative going, then of course you can insert stuff, and people don't give it a second. You know what I mean? They don't give a second look, or even a first.
Because the Jews own the publishing houses and the media, they can establish these things by repetition and aggressive sort of, you know, just well, repetition. And it's like what I was saying earlier about, you know, not only they did the same thing with Freud, they get a cult-like figure, and then they just push their ideas as if they're facts. The same with Einstein, with his credentials as well, because they've got the power of the media and the publishing houses. Yeah. You know.
Anyway, there's plenty more of that stuff. I don't really want to go into it now. There's a lot of it. We looked, for example, at the supposed atom bomb and H1 test sites, which are completely sort of nuclear. They're not consistent with what was supposed to have happened there, and that sort of thing. There's a similar thing here. Option 7 is number 7 on my menu here, nuclear power doubts. And this was another thing which I found difficult to believe at first. And if I think this was also Roger Desjardins' original contribution. He thought that they're dump loads, a dump load being a thing that gets rid of surplus electricity, because electricity generation is quite wasteful. You have all these great big turbines chuntering away, generating alternating current at 50 or 60 cycles a second, whatever it might be, depending on where you got the equipment from. And if there's not a match, I mean, you do get used to sort of switching on lights and stuff, and you get the right amount of power out of it. It just seems natural. But there's somebody somewhere with equipment that kind of adds all these things together, integrates them together, and then if there's too much, you leak some off, and if there's too little, you have to start something else up. So normally,
like dump loads and stuff.
Yeah, under normal running, they know roughly what the consumption is going to be. So they add on a sort of 10 or 20% or something, and a dump load is just like a sort of big kettle or something that gets rid of it. You get it in people who go camping, people who've got their own generators. You have to have a system to balance up the load. Anyway, that's the idea about nuclear. And again, there is evidence that if power plants fail, if there's a power cut, these things don't actually generate anything. The whole thing goes dead. But I'd prefer to have more information on that, really. But I've got distracted into other topics. There's another thing, like for example, nuclear submarines, and events like Chernobyl and Fukushima and all this kind of stuff. And I've got a lot of material on that there. But I suspect nuclear submarines are just a myth. I think they just, these things are so big, and they get nobody can see them, of course, and you can get charging, they can be charged electrically, and they're also rather useless. You see, if you once you get the hang of this stuff, if you think of Trident, you've got this whatever it is they want, 20 billion or something for this thing, and in the first place, the capacity to launch these things underwater seems a bit kind of doubtful to me, because there's such a big change of density when the if the things ever get up. But if, of course, if there's no such thing as nuclear warheads, the thing is obvious, right? It's just a money-making scheme. I mean, nowadays they keep very quiet about it, but of course, if you've got cruise missiles, which are reliable things, I mean, they're just like aeroplanes plus automatic pilot added to them. You really don't need Trident, do you? You might just as well have a guided missile kind of zooming around. So I think that's coming to an end. I think the criticism is kind of builds up in a subtle way, which is not really very noticeable. Obviously, it's not going to be publicised. The BBC is sort of Jewish-controlled. I mean, they're not going to have anything about it. There was a thing, incidentally, thorium power. I don't know if you remember this. They made a fuss about it 5-6 years ago. There was a Jewish charity devoted to promoting thorium power. I'd take a big bet that's bullshit. In fact, I've got a different theory about...
if the Jews are involved with stuff, the majority of it is bullshit.
Unfortunately, they tend to control all these relevant parts of it. You know, you'll get the people who do the sort of building and the maintenance and the whatever rail loads or something, but the actual warheads and stuff are all run by Jews. You know, they have Jewish companies controlling these things. I remember even Alex Jones said that, which was quite surprising to me. Anyway, and there's things like Chernobyl. You see, my best guess is that was a dump load, and somebody sort of turned the water off or something, so it just kind of melted. I don't believe there's anything. It's well known, in fact, that there's no permanent damage there. You know, the place is full of wildlife and so on.
All right, okay. So you've got, if anybody's interested in this stuff, I mean, there's no lack of information, and you know, on this site, I mean, you've got a lot of references and, as you say, bibliographies, and you've got all sorts of stuff for anybody who wants to go through. You've got a lot on there, Ray, haven't you?
That's right. There is. That's the technical side. There's also the political side, and the whole idea really was for the Jews. Of course, they won the Second World War, didn't they? I don't think there's anything about that. They had the Fed under their control.
They had
Russia under their control. What was left of it? They were, you know, killing off people by the bucket load. All of Eastern Europe was essentially Jewish controlled. Germany. Germany.
They've wrecked Germany now with immigration.
Well, at that time they wrecked it with bombing.
Yeah, now they've just completely sort of attempting to eradicate the German people, you know.
I think it's instinctive. By the way, if there are people with my website in front of them, look at my truths about Jews. There's a panel about Jews. The first part is chronological. It starts early and goes up to 2015. I've got here. But amongst the list of articles there's one which says important Jew parasitic evolution theory. That's under the files. The files have got so long, I had to split them up. But the guide for the perplexed about Jews.
Do you believe in evolution?
Evolution, yes, I do. Yeah. Well, you don't have to believe the full thing to understand about breeding. I mean, everybody, I presume, accepts that parents resemble their offspring. But there are variations. So if you breed from... I mean, I remember reading, I don't know if it's true, that if you get wolves and you pick ones which are more tame than the others, more kind of human-friendly, if you breed just from them, in three generations you get a noticeably friendlier breed of wolf, right?
Well, this is probably why the Jews just get worse, because it's just like a bottleneck kind of eugenics thing going on. Anybody who's not, you know, uber ethnocentric, they get pushed out, and they bring in those who are just totally ethnocentric. So they just, you know, I even think that some of the stuff Freud spoke about, the Oedipus complex and some of the other neurosis, that he was basically getting these things from Jews. Because of, you know, malfunctions in their own race, probably due to aggressive inbreeding and stuff, you know?
Oh, yes, I'm sure that's true. Kevin MacDonald is the sort of person who dealt with that kind of stuff. Also is Hoffman. I read recently, I don't know if it's true, that Michael Hoffman is actually a a Jew who converted to Catholicism, which is unfortunate because that means they're...
Well, I had Michael Hoffman supposed to come on the show, and then he suddenly said he was busy. I don't know. Anyway, we'll be back in about 4 minutes.
Yeah, okay.
Right.
Hi, and welcome back to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. I'm your host here, Paul Stevenson, and I'm with Ray West, who is the creator and editor of, two websites, biglies.org and Nuke Lies. That's N-U-K-E Lies, referring to nuclear weapons. Support Revolution Radio, and if you like the work I do, you can support me on PayPal. There's a PayPal link on my YouTube channel. That's Paul Stevenson. Ray, are you back with
me? Yeah, I'm here.
All right. You mentioned something. Let's change the subject slightly, because you mentioned something. It's probably ironic because, you know, I'm Irish myself. Yeah. You mentioned the Jews and Ireland, and I haven't really done a huge amount of investigation into Irish history and the Jewish influence. But go ahead and let us know what you know about
Scotland,
that.
Scotland. It's another one. It's another one of the things which I've only come across relatively recently. If you look at my front page here and go down, there's a piece on Napoleon in the 19th century. There's also Ireland, Scotland, Jews, and Cromwell. And Poland and world Jewry. I only realised very recently that Scotland was Jewish controlled for a long time. In fact,
there's a lot of Freemasons in Scotland.
It's the same kind of thing. I mean, Scotland has never booted Jews out, unlike pretty much everyone.
Yeah.
That's related to the Civil War and Jews and Cromwell. So there's a lot to be said there. I think the IRA was a kind of some sort of fake along with MI5 or MI6. To give you an example, there's in Manchester, I don't know when it was, some time ago, there was a huge bomb which went off, and that was attributed to the Irish. But the whole area has been rebuilt. You know, there's a nice new sort of shopping centre, if you like that kind of thing. And the thing that occurs to you, of course, is that if they could be so sure that it's safe now, I mean, what's going on here? How come they can be so sure? And so I think that was another land clearance scheme. I think this whole Irish thing was jigged up in some kind of way.
Was the famine, was that an attempt?
I think what happened with the Irish famine was that, I don't know if it was deliberate, but the thing, what people don't realise is that, of course, all these crops have been sort of paid for, they've been sort of subsidised, and people wanted their money back. And so the question really is, what was going on there? Because a lot of these starving people were, they had to sell up all their stuff to get money. And the question is, how the hell did, what was going on there? So I think, again, it was some kind of, there's something going on there, which I don't know the detail of. That was when Victoria was there, isn't it? The sort of thing I don't mention in...
The connection probably is Cromwell, because Cromwell allowed the Jews back in. I think it was Benjamin Disraeli, who was a Dutch Jew, basically wrote to Cromwell, and that was the start of Christian Zionism, because the crafty Disraeli said, and you know, twisted the scriptures to say to Cromwell, of course, he was a fundamental Christian, that unless the Jews were scattered to all parts of the world, that Christ the Messiah won't come back, and if they're not in England, then they're not all in every corner of the world. So Cromwell brought them back in again after King Edward I expired them in 12, expelled them in 1290.
Well, they also came in with the Normans, didn't they, in 1066? I think.
In fact, they're not even here legally, because that edict by Edward I still stands, as far as I know, legally.
I believe that's true. Yeah. I think they didn't want to draw attention to it. But the Norman conquest, I think, was similar. If you look at the Norman conquest in new light as being similar to the takeover of Russia by Jews, there was in the north of England, there was they called it the harrying of the north. There were some huge atrocities that took place. So they did come in with the Normans, then they were expelled, and then Cromwell got them back in. Yeah, that's right. And of course there was a move west after via Amsterdam, via Holland, which of course had ports, which I think was attributable to the discovery of the Americas. I mean, in 1492, that was obviously a big money making. Let me just read this thing here about the evolution of Jews in the sense. This is sub-evolution. If people hate the idea of evolution, all I'm talking about is sort of breeding of selective breeding of certain characters. This is from an article which I think originally was German. I put it on my website. It's Jew Parasite Evolution. in the area of the Fertile Crescent, the Middle East, the place where for the longest time in observable history humans lived together in cities, yet another third group could develop. This is in addition to sort of tough ones and cunning ones. The specimen of this group tends to look like beta males. Take Henry Kissinger. Doesn't he look cute and harmless? Where they are in fact parasitic and aggressive. Of course they need to deceive their counterparts. They do not want to let them see their true nature. Every physical characteristic was selected for this purpose. Their eyes are without clarity, pale and cloudy, so you cannot guess their intentions. Their body language is deceitful. The voice, intonation, and language talent is programmed to hide instead of revealing their true intentions. That's the essence of the evolutionary idea. There's plenty more, loads more stuff.
They really are. As I said to you earlier, when we were speaking offline, I mean, these people are a strange bunch, are they not?
Well, that's what the trick, I think, is to just to try and work out what's going on.
This is why they're so successful. I don't know how many times I've spoken to, you know, other Christians and stuff, and they just apply, you know, they apply their own sort of standards, including morally and intellectually, to themselves, and they just can't seem to get it through their heads that there's a group of people out there who are not like you.
I think that's right, yeah. It's just very worrying, isn't it?
Well, it's a liability, really. When you know, if people don't believe in conspiracy, I mean, it's so infantile, you know.
Oh, let me just—we discussed earlier the business about Jews and Christians. I know you probably won't agree with this, but I've got a piece on my site here in the generals. There's a little table saying short articles, thoughtful items, speculations. There's a whole list of them here. Beginning of the 12 days of Christmas and Amen, but down there somewhere there's early Christianity, and my belief is that Jews, using this very same technique of repetition, constant repetition, all being united, apparently in a genetic way, it's a bit like, you know, some animals have, most animals sort of run away if they're threatened, but some animals just lie dead, and in the same sort of way, most human beings kind of argue up to a point and then sort of stop it, but with Jews they just keep going. And I think that's what happened to the early Christianity, and that they forced this stuff onto up the coast of the Mediterranean, Greece first, and then Italy. And you said that a fairly obvious question is that, well, why would they do that with Christianity? Because the Christians hated Jews. But I think what happened at that stage was that people looked at them and they thought, oh, Christ, it's another bunch of Jews promoting this crap. And so they'd think about this and they'd say, no, we're very much anti-Jewish. In fact, Yeshua said that the Jews are a bunch of, you know, bunch of money
devils.
Well, whatever. The point is, it means that the people at the on the receiving end, the early these are not Christians in the early Christians. I think had their own set of ideas. It could be anything. It might have been how to tame the Roman Empire, something like that. It might have been perfectly sensible. But I think they were just wiped out by this constant barrage of stuff from Jews. It's a bit like the Holocaustianity idea. If, you know, then Jews are not interested in British history or French history or Russia or Poland or anything. All they want to do is impose this crap. And that, in my view, is what they did with Christianity. So that all these people who are Bible Christians or whatever Christians, they're all still under the thumb of these Jews. You know,
Well, we'll have to agree to disagree on that, because, I mean, I've done a lot of work on that in the early Christian church, and I sort of take the claims for what they are. But,
okay.
The other thing we spoke about, and this is fascinating, it's just like empires and stuff like that. I mean, this is what Ford said. The international Jewish plan to move their money market to the U.S. was what the American people did not want. We have the warning of history as to what this means. It is meant in turn that Spain, Venice, Germany, or Great Britain received the blame or suspicion of the word for what the Jewish financiers have done. Quote, the British did this, the German did this, when it was actually the international Jew who did it. The nation's been but the marked spaces on his checkerboard. Today around the world, the blaming word is heard. Quote, the United States did this. If it were not for those United States, the world would be in a better shape. The Americans are a sordid, greedy, cruel people. And people don't really understand that, do they? The Jews are financing these empires and these...
That's absolutely correct. Yeah, it's a nicely worded article there by Ford, which he had to apologize for later in 1927. He was presumably threatened by losing his money and everything. But that is a very good point about Jews being like a sort of layer. Everybody else thinks of things in geographical terms. You know about France or Algeria or New Zealand or something. But Jews don't think of it that way. They've got this spread out attitude, which is kind of similar to Christianity. Same idea as it was Freemasonry, of course. They've got little branches stuck all over the place, and it is a very powerful technique if you can keep it going and keep it secret.
Yeah, because they sort of stand behind, and they're funding everything, as Ford pointed out, and then people blame the British or the Germans did this or the United States did this, when really it's just a few corrupt elites that are actually playing ball with the Jews and they're in the pockets, yeah. You know.
There was I think it was Joyce who was speaking to you and mentioned South Africa, where the Jews got hold of gold and diamonds, but they also had what they call base metals. They also controlled iron or steel or something there as well. And of course,
well, it's the same today with the US and the Arab Spring and the whole Middle East wars, or just Israel war.
And of course, it does apply to other things. For example, the foisting of opium on the Chinese, the opium wars. That was I hadn't realized until only a few years ago. It was a Jewish thing.
Eustace Mullins spoke about that.
It's terrible. I mean, it's incredible, really. The thing was, they got the support of British and French troops. I'm not sure if it was official government policy, actually. If you've got a thing like that where it's a sort of partial thing, the Jews wanted it just for themselves, I'm not sure that the British would have had a war entirely for that, because I don't think
there will be any wars, really, because it takes a lot for people to fight to the death, and you know, it's a last resort. But of course, when you take it, if you don't realize the Jewish involvement, then you don't understand, really.
Absolutely, you know? Right. I think it'll people who don't understand about Jews in history will come to be seen as just out of date. You know, they're just not taking account of the facts. And of course, this applies to most historians, unfortunately.
Yeah, because as I always say, if you don't understand the Jews element, then you don't understand.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Yeah, I was trying to think of another example. Oh yeah, well, there's a whole thing from Cromwell, and then there's the French Revolution, which seems to have been another Jewish thing. Well, I'm sure it was. I mean, it was a Freemason. The Freemasons came in first.
Yeah, every revolution is a Jewish one.
It's well, they call it, the whole idea of a revolution is a Jewish idea. Yep.
Well, that's what's happening in the West today, in Europe and in the US. They're attempting to, you know, another revolution.
They do Jews tend to change their presentation of these things depending on what's going on. For example, in 1900 to 1914, there were a lot of Jewish bomb throwing and, you know, assassinations, and they called themselves anarchists at that time. Anarchists. So if you look up anarchism, you'll find quite a lot of references. There's a novel by Joseph Conrad, for example. They call themselves anarchists, but of course, once they'd got control of the Soviet Union, they'd switched to communism, because obviously you can't have, it's not, nobody could pretend that thug rule by Jews in Russia was anarchistic. So they changed that, and people don't tend to keep track of these things.
Well, they just switch. As I say, it's back to pragmatism again. They'll be left, they'll be right, they'll be white, they'll be Jewish. They'll be whatever needs to, you know, to suit their agenda. They don't have any really ideology apart from the desire to subjugate the whole world.
By the way, I think also that Islam was a Jewish thing. I found some evidence online, and generally there are quite a few books on Islam, all of them missing the point as a rule. But it came from nowhere, and it was obviously a written thing, and most of it is actually based on Jewish.
Yes.
Well, it's very similar to Jews. I've got to put a piece somewhere here on my site.
I've long suspected that Islam was a Jewish operation to destroy Christianity. You've got a different view of Christianity.
I think the first thing it did was not destroy Christianity. There was on the northwest frontier of India, there was a Buddhist civilization that was there for years and years. I mean, a number of centuries, I don't know the full detail, and that was the first thing that the Muslims went for. It's not very well known now. It's called the Hindu Kush. I'd be happier to... It's the sort of thing that's been suppressed quite efficiently. The most notorious mention of it is by an American writer, American historian in the 30s. But anyway, that was where they went to first. I think because they're, as you say, they're opportunistic. And they took over and pretty much destroyed the Buddhist thing. You know, this business of destroying statues and getting rid of civilization and
it's a Jewish revolutionary spirit thing. I don't know where
it's not a new thing. It's very sad, isn't it? Because the most, I mean, I'll be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if Stonehenge will go in the next century or so due to these people. Let me just go to education as well. I've got a whole lot of book reviews here, which I've put together in long files so that people can read dozens of them if they want to, at great cost to my hit rate. But But there's one here on it's in that Jewish 1960s textbook, G.R. Elton, Reformation Europe, 1517 to 1539. I won't be surprised you've read that, because you did a history degree, didn't you? But this is typical of a Jewish author, and writing this book from a Jewish point of view. There's a lot of the stuff is no doubt true, but they carefully miss out anything that's anti-Jewish and don't include anything that's, the truth, really. And that review is banned by Amazon. They've had one of their little purges. That was in February 2015. And this is what happened with the nuclear issue as well, actually. They had a chap called Pearls, spelt Pearls, more or less, in Britain, who was he was awarded a professorship of physics. This is what they do if they can get into academic places. They can cause a lot of damage. This is a slightly different thing from in the US. In the US, you get Jews in all the soft sciences, the pseudosciences, all of...
They're in a lot of the political, sort of social sciences at the moment. A lot of the kids are coming out of universities totally brainwashed by Jewish ideologies, Western-hating, white race-hating stuff. You know, that's why they're all tearing down these statues and
And, of course, about half of all teachers in New York are Jews.
Yeah, Andrew Joyce did a complete breakdown of how the Jews control the academia with given names, all left, right, and centre. You know, undeniable, really.
It's very sad, isn't it? It's very sad, and of course, it does mean from a Jewish point of view, they could get this much easier for them to get a job. You know, if they're in, I don't know, you had some academic background. If you ever try to get a job, it's much more difficult for non-Jews because they get a Jew who says the right things from their point of view, and they just.
Well, yeah, the universities are just totally leftist driven. So if any ideas which contradict that, I mean, you find it a difficult environment to teach in if you can teach in it at all, you know.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't personally call it left. I mean, that's based on the idea of the Russian Revolution, supposedly.
But you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I would just describe it as Jewish. It's Jewish influenced. It's not left.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they call it left.
They do. The Americans do. Yeah, because they haven't even learned to piece together all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, because they don't know the difference between Jewish socialism, Jewish communism, Jewish economics, and Jewish psychology. All of it is just pseudo. That's why. I think it was E. Michael Jones said that, you know, the Jewish century, or are we all Jews? Because our everything has just been dominated by Jews and their output in the last century, particularly. You know,
that's absolutely true. And excuse that, and you see the same with official, you know, permitted opponents. I mean, I was quite interested in Bertrand Russell when I was younger, and also H.G. Wells, and people like that, people who are socialist in some fairly genuine sense. I mean, they wanted the advantages of industry to be sort of spread out more. But Russell...
If you look at the difference between Hitler's Germany and National Socialism, there's a big difference between what we call
socialism. Absolutely. How true that is, how accurate that is, how accurate Hitler is interpreted, I'm uncertain. I read a very good piece by Miles Mathis. Have you heard of him? I think he's a leading. I think he's one of the best revisionists.
What's his name?
Miles W. Mathis.
No, I haven't heard of him.
You should do. He did a very good piece on Kennedy, for example, the Kennedy assassination. He goes right back to the start and looks at photos, and he concluded that Jack Ruby had a black pullover on when he was shot, and Mathis thinks, well, there's a photo there with a microphone hanging from the ceiling and a camera mounted up in the air, and it was obviously a posed photo. He thinks in fact that Kennedy was not assassinated, he just sort of went underground and he got fed up with being famous or something. The chap was wearing a black pullover to hide the blood.
That was kind of hard to believe, though, because suddenly we saw his head blown off.
No, his head wasn't blown off. Jack Ruby, no, he was just...
Oh, right, Jack Ruby, not Kennedy.
Well, Kennedy is the same kind of thing. If you look at the actual evidence for Kennedy, Mathis got some photos from a morgue, and the body there, if it is a body, was not consistent with Kennedy's appearance. Mathis is a portrait painter. He's quite good on just matching up small blemishes on faces and that kind of thing. Anyway, I'm changing the subject a bit, really. I'm just saying that he was a good chap. Now, how did I get onto that? What were we talking about? We were talking about penetration of academia, weren't we?
Yeah, I could think of penetration. As I say, next time I get Andrew Joyce on, I'm going to do an interview with him on the Jewish infiltration of universities and academia, basically, because it's pretty much totally, it's an absolute operation, really.
It is. I've got, and it's quite, it's worked out very kind of efficiently. I've got a review of a book here on social sciences, social workers and racism, it's called, and you can get the exact date when it was determined that all British society is racist, and they made it you couldn't get a diploma in social work without signing up with this shit,
It's just pure PC driven stuff.
Well, it's a Jewish thing. It's like with the BBC, they have and the Actors Union Equity. They had a piece, I don't know, they may have buried it now or hidden it a bit, but they certainly used to have a thing in it, a paragraph saying that you would not encourage in any way anything that's racist or, according to their interpretation. So there are lots, all these actors you see on TV are sort of gilded. They can't say that. If they want to, they may not want to, but...
It's depressing, isn't it?
It's absolutely terrible. I get really sick watching TV. You see this stuff with all the criminals shown as white, that sort of thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And every time the blacks commit a crime, it's always the white man's fault.
Yeah, that sort of thing, yeah. Let me just say, actually, I've got a thing about that on my website as well. It's in the Jews file index. It's called Jew Course, Jew-Course, Teaching Real Jewish Studies, What Everyone Should Know About Jews. Suggestions for awareness courses. And I've got a whole list of things here on race, religion, philosophy, history of ideas, sociology, organisations, science, scientific method, a joke Jewish exam paper.
Yeah, the whole sociology.
I think people, if there are some of your listeners who are interested in this kind of stuff, look at the Teaching Real Jewish Studies part. And I've done my very best to have lists of topics and things which have been suggested to me by Jewish reading in the past, and there's a lot of it's important stuff. There's a lot there. In fact, there's too much. I mean, they've infiltrated every bloody thing you can think of, including the legal system, the royal family, the House
everything,
of Lords,
yeah.
All the universities, the factories, they're owned by Jews. It's just
through the EU, they've managed to get most of Europe to give up their sovereignty.
The EU is another thing, and what's needed, of course, is some way of whites getting together and having something similar, having their own unified group.
Well, it's ironic because you're seeing a lot of solidarity between the European nations at the minute for true European union against the EU.
Well, I hope that's what's needed, doesn't it? I mean, obviously it makes
it
sense
is, yeah.
to have a European union, doesn't it? Just as it made sense for the states in America to unite in some way, to have an overall thing, but of course it's easy to corrupt, as they discovered.
Yeah, for sure. All right, we'll be back in about 3 minutes, right? UFOs.
I've been scribbling down notes here. Yeah, I've got a theory of... I don't believe in them, I'm just giving that... If you click on that and read the article, it makes some quite interesting points about the sort of theory behind them and distribution and stuff.
What's the motivation there, then?
One of the motivations is to confuse Goyim, really. You sometimes get... newspaper quotes articles which say that there are UFOs flying around some nuclear weapons plant, something like that. It's just to kind of add a bit of mystery and enhancement to it.
So you don't believe in alien life and all that, do you?
Well, it might be life. I can't believe that they've got as far. We're so far away from the stars, the nearest star is so far away, I can't believe they'd anything like that get it, so I don't regard it as a serious option. If you look at this thing, here are a few interesting points. I mean, the no moving parts, when jet engines were invented, there were no moving parts. Before that, aeroplanes all had great big propellers thrashing around, but when jet engines were invented, you had no moving parts. So again, so the fashionable thing was to make UFOs have no moving parts. Then after that, they became manoeuvrable. Instead of being just fast, they could sort of zigzag around in a way that aeroplanes could.
Defies physics.
Well, it defies, of the time when you've got some fantastic technical advance, then you can always invent something that's even more fantastic. By the way, let me just draw your attention to this piece here on Edgerton, Geermershausen and Greer. They were people who I came across these. I found these through looking through my focal encyclopedia of photography of years old. One of these people photographed the original drop of milk, I think it was. You know, the thing like a little crown with little droplets. Mm. That was done by electronic flash, and he was one of this group who did all the fake films, in my view, fake films for the Atomic Energy Commission. That's worth a look. It gives you a good indication of how these things are done. There's no sound. It's just a thing off the. Oh, by the way, another thing here is DVD. If you're interested in doing this kind of research, get hold of. You can get DVDs now cheap and on things like the Second World War and on tests of so-called nuclear weapons. And if you look at them, you can go through them one frame at a time. In fact, this is one of the ways that the originator, Jesse War, found these things. He looked at a supposed H-bomb test, and he found that one frame had been inserted. It was reversed to make it look brighter, to make the thing look brighter after it.
Yeah, I have looked at one. There's one of them where, you know, once you look closer at it, it obviously is, you know, it's clearly just in a studio with little matchbox houses and probably a big fan.
Oh, yeah,
or something, the
matchbox.
You know?
Oh, that's right, yeah.
And then there's another one with the sun coming up. If you slow it down, it's just the sun coming up, and then they speed it up, and it's just the brightness of the morning sun coming up. It looks like a nuclear explosion.
The sunset one as well. Yeah, it's interesting how they do that. Of course, they didn't have computer graphics at the time.
So, no.
And the smoke, a lot of the smoke is slowed down to make it look as though it's...
Yeah, it doesn't. If you have a second look at it at all, a lot of it looks very fake, you know.
Let me draw attention. There's a piece on nuclides, which is how many Jews does it take to rule the world? Do Jews rule the world? Are Jews an elite? And there's a very good chap there, French chap, Verioc is his nickname, who reckoned that it would take 10,000 people to control a modern state. That's
yeah, because
I was just going on my site here. Right at the top of it. There's a couple of search engines, FreeFind. Actually, I recommend it. Very good search engine. So you can look there for. There's the search nuclides, and you can look for "Do Jews rule the world?" and it'll give you a list of links from this site.
Just in the break, I was trying to remember, because we were talking about, you know, how the Jews fit in, and they'll be left, they'll be right, they'll be socialist, they'll be right-wing, they'll be whatever. I'm trying to think, what's the word? For the creature who sort of, he wears many faces. What's the
chameleon
word? I'm trying to remember. That's the one, yeah.
Chameleon, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's the word. How do you spell it?
Spell C-H, some people...
C-H-A-M, isn't it?
It's chameleon, but I think chameleon is the...
E-L-E-O-N, yeah, that's them, yeah, yeah, because they just literally...
Well...
They've got many faces.
Have you heard,
you know,
of these other comparisons with biological, you know, corruption of animals that will control the mental state of people? I've got something about this here.
Well, I studied psychotherapy later on in life, after, you know, psychology. Obviously, as I said to you yesterday, I sort of did I studied music, really, but and, you know, a lot of the terms like projection and stuff like that, that Freud came out with that, you know, and the authoritarian personality, that, you know, that the Gentiles are projecting, you know, their fear of the Jews, you know, literally it's the Gentile who wants to take over rather than the Jew, and this is where anti-Semitism comes from. It's actually the complete opposite. I mean, this term projection is how the Jews operate. No, that's probably where they got it from, because they just project their own BS onto everyone else, when everything that they are guilty of. I don't know how much of it's self-deception. You know, it might be in the genes now, where it's just, because you sometimes see Jews defending themselves and they look shocked at the accusations, and you're thinking, it's like in public when they're, you know, in the public sphere, it's just like they automatically have a face of innocence and shock when they're accused of these things, but they know what they're up to, so it's kind of strange.
Yeah,
you know?
Do you think it's skilled acting? There have been, I've seen lots.
I think it's like narcissists. You know, you get, you that's what I'm saying. You study narcissism, and it's a total double standard. The arrogance and hubris is what drives the double standard. So they can cause as much suffering to anybody else simply because it's them. But any little slight is intolerable to them for the same reason. It's because it's them. It's just such intense levels of hubris. You can see this, and you know, I've seen this in non-Jewish people as well, of course, just in, you know, just the absolute arrogance, where they, you know, the double standard of the way they, you know, deal with people.
Yeah, psychopathy. I think the whole
psychopathy,
the definitions
of
that, I think, are taken from Jews, although I haven't kind of checked that. Seems kind of likely. By the way, I've just found my thing here. If you look on the Jews file, there are several things on parasites, and it's a particular type of parasite that...
Yeah, they are total parasites.
Well, there's a particular type which changes the pattern, the behavioural patterns. Do you know the ones I'm talking about? There's some mentioned by Dawkins, and I think they must have been discovered relatively recently in the last 10 or 20 years.
Well, I did read Eustace Mullins' book, The Biological Jew, which was pretty hard-hitting and didn't hold back on that issue.
Yeah, okay, well, this is arguably not a... Well, it could be a good or not a good comparison, but some insects will paralyze creatures and just eat from them. But other ones have got a better technique. They, for example, ichneumon flies will lay eggs inside caterpillars of the right species, and the caterpillars eat the thing from the inside until it's completely hollow, and then they kind of emerge and fly off.
But you asked the question, are they good actors? I think they are very good actors, but I think it goes beyond that. It's just like, you know, it's like the man who, you know, he's cheating on his wife, and he denies it so often that when he's accused of it, he actually believes himself that he's been wrongly accused.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
It's self-deception.
It needs to be understood, otherwise people are going to continue to fall victim.
Well, I think the important thing is not to buy into their distorted version of reality, because you know, not everyone else has got the memo that they are God's chosen people with the right to rule. They just assume that everyone else must be aware of this, fact.
Pseudo fact, yeah. By the way, I've also got YouTube. My nickname there is Re-Revisionist. That's Re in front of revisionist, and I've got a very long video there called Lords of the Nukes, which is 3.5 hours. It's painfully wrong, really. I gave it the name as a sort of token of the Lord of the Rings, which is of course fading now. But if your readers or listeners watch that, give yourself 3.5 hours, watch it through. It gives a rundown on the whole business of nukes and their deception, and it also includes nuclear power, and there's lots of illustrations, you know, pictures, drawings, videos, Christ knows what, stuck in there, and quotations from books as well. For example, some of the experts from the US Air Force were completely unimpressed by Hiroshima and Nagasaki. I've also got some more videos which are Jew shock. I've used as the strap line or something. Jew shock. One of them is quite a good one, about 40 minutes. Trying to cover all the ways in which Jews, that I've discovered, ways in which Jews will hide away. It's called something like discover Jews for yourself. It's important to get the idea across that people need to discover it, need to do a bit of work. It's not going to happen if they don't make a bit of effort. But once you've got there, once you've climbed the fence, as it were, of course you get a better view.
I'm sure a lot of people are wondering, how they would keep, a conspiracy secret like Hiroshima and Nagasaki and things like that. I mean, how many people is it going to involve to silence or to deceive or what?
I don't think it's really that many. They had complete control over Japanese news. There was complete censorship for, I think, something like 10 years. Everything going out of it was censored, was examined. So anybody who's had different ideas would be in trouble. And of course there's also the money side, you know, the complete dependence on Jewish money from the US. And so
go ahead, sir.
So they're not going to say anything. So although in a lot of cases there's a piece I put there somewhere about the idea that there were thousands of people who knew about all this sort of things, so it couldn't possibly have been. I'm clicking here trying to find it, but I can't remember.
What about people who have been sick because of nuclear pollution and all that, and you know, and people who've the birth defects and all those sorts of things? How do you describe it?
As far as I know, all of that is bullshit. And for example, in Chernobyl, there was a some kind of mass market paperback written by a Jew, of course. And there's a picture in that of a rabbit with no ears, this kind of thing. And it's got very little evidential value at all. You can't really tell where these things came from, who they were, and so on. And as regards Hiroshima, there's a whole campaign in the American cinema, in newsreels, to get rid of the idea that the Japanese were irradiated. I think it might have been because the Japanese themselves had a cultural bar to it. They would sort of chuck people out if they thought they were radioactive. Or it may have been that the Americans wanted to visit Japan more or something, I don't know. But there was definitely a propaganda coming. See, if you have lots of propaganda, these things tend to overlap and interact with each other. Mm-hmm. And there was the initial campaign about Hiroshima, which is all lies.
Well, it's again, it's testimony to the power of controlling the TV and the news networks and the publishing houses and everything else. I mean, you can pretty much create any story and sort of version of reality if you've got enough power.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's right. There's a film with Harrison Ford in it, a Steven Spielberg film, showing a supposed nuclear test with a great big, the kind of thing, you can imagine what it's like. So it's film as well. And of course, in the 60s, there were all these films about the Cold War, and there's a James Bond film about, a nuclear weapon. I've included it in my video, actually.
The whole Cold War was about to be.
Of course, it's kind of convincing in the sense that there might have been, the Russians might have been hostile to everybody. You just don't know. There's no way. That's one of the great things about controlling the media, is that you can make stuff up. It's much, much more difficult to oppose it. That's why I think it's important to just get in a crack, open the door a bit. If there are some people listening to this, they're probably thinking this is total bullshit. But but once the idea is planted, some of them, the ones who've got some curiosity, can look and see. And there's nothing as convincing, really, as finding a thing for yourself. If they go through a DVD of some supposed test, or the rainbow bomb, supposed to have been a bomb, the only effect it had was some Hawaiian phone exchange went off for a bit or something. Once you get the hang of psyops and false flags, you're much more open to, you can see things. In fact, you feel a fool. There's on one of my YouTubes, there was a comment from some chap who'd worked in Europe in the sort of supreme headquarters, whatever they call it, this bullshit. He said he felt a fool. He'd been working for 20 years, and now he realized, presumably, that there was just no truth in it.
Well, it's very hard for people if they're educated, because I think they did a survey in America, and I think people with degrees are much less likely to believe in conspiracies, because A, they're very intelligent people, but B, it's kind of their identities tied up with the education system that they've come through, and then there's a certain amount of pride where it's just like, well, you'd have to admit to yourself that you're totally duped and you're a very intelligent person. I I've got friends of mine who are lawyers, and I've talked to them about some of these things, and they can't accept.
Yes,
it.
Yes, I know exactly what you mean. It's true. It's very depressing. We were discussing before, I think off air, about IQs. And of course, IQs are deliberately designed to test things where there's no human judgment. You test spatial, like the sort of thing that architects would like, and you discuss, and there's puns and arithmetical tricks, but there's nothing on cunning or the effects of bravado or lies.
Parasitism.
Nothing like that at all. There should be a JQ test, which tests your awareness, and if you applied that to the people you're talking about, lawyers and so on, they would be
fail miserably.
Presumably, yeah. And I wouldn't be at all surprised if there is some sort of test. If Jews, when they do their bar mitzvah or something, if there isn't some kind of question and answer session they have to go through.
It is fascinating that the types of minds that can handle these things are open to an alternative view of reality, and people who just accept the paradigm that they're in. I mean, it's just, I don't know what really distinguishes one person. I know there was that study about people who have degrees, and I can only infer that it's because like the reasons I give, their identity's tied up with it. They'd have to admit they're duped when they're intelligent people, which might be very difficult for them to do. But I've never really figured out which kind of mind accepts and which
it
doesn't.
It could be a genetic thing. Let me try and explain this. I remember reading years ago that being colorblind is not quite as damaging as it might seem, because some types of colour blindness enable you to see things which people with normal sight can't. Are you with me? You know, you see these tests with a number in a made out of green, made out of coloured daubs. Some people can, most people see the what they're supposed to see, but a few people with defective vision can actually see. So it does, in some circumstances, it's an advantage to have a small group of people who have defective vision. That's what I'm saying. And similarly, with like most people are right-handed, but presumably it's an advantage to occasionally to have a few left-handed ones, so they can do things a bit differently. And I think if you look at, nobody knows how the brain works. I mean, it's
my mother was left-handed.
Oh, well, there you go.
I can't talk to my mother about the Jewish question because she starts getting very emotional about the Holocaust that ends up in a shouting match. You know?
Yes, I know. I know exactly. I tend to just go for it. I just tread rather tactlessly. Anyway, I just say, suppose there are. I don't know how intelligence works. Let's take learning. Suppose most people. You can see why it's biologically advantageous to learn fast. If you can learn fast, you're less likely to come a cropper. Your lessons will be learned. But if there's a small minority who are suspicious or who take the trouble to tease it out, that can be an advantage to the whole group, even if the first lot don't know it or aren't aware of it. I think it's possible that it's genetic, and you do get people who are just sort of awkward. Although it can just as well be ridiculous beliefs. It's just as likely that people will end up believing rubbish. But I think there's something to be said for the idea that learning is distributed like that. And with Jews, it's all one way. There's no skeptics. They're just all believe what they do. And then the question is, where do they get their ideas from? And presumably it's some central, maybe a Rothschild or Rothschild.
Satan. I mean, these guys are up to their neck. I mean, I know you're probably an atheist, you don't believe in such things, but, they certainly believe in it because, these guys in the Talmud, they're up to their neck in satanic worship and all sorts of stuff and sort of sacrificing to gods and Molech and the Old Testament and stuff. I mean, that's, you can get that information.
I can't believe in a God or a Satan in the sense of having a sort of being that kind of strolls around looking at things. But, I mean, if you take Satanism as being something just kind of what you instinctively think of as evil, I suppose you can, that's fit.
But what I'm saying is that these guys do, because they it's on record where these guys are up to their neck and sacrificing babies to Old Testament gods and stuff like that. In fact, it pricked my interest when I first got into the whole conspiracy. I thought, wow, these guys believe in these sort of gods in the Old Testament and stuff, but
did you look into ritual murder?
In what sense?
Accusations, true or false, I don't know, of ritual murder.
Well, SRAs and stuff like that.
I just wondered if, you did a history degree, I just wondered if anyone's taking this seriously.
I didn't do a history degree, I did history at A-level, but I did music later, but I did, no, I never looked at anything like that on a mainstream curriculum or anything, but I have looked at it.
Do you keep your eye on developments in history, or is it completely in your past?
No, I do. I mean, I think, as I said to you off air, when you're a kid like that, some of the history was so boring, but when you get older and you've got, it has some relevance and you see things repeating themselves and you see how it, impacts the society and the culture today, then it becomes much more interesting. So, yeah, I am very, very interested in history.
Oh, that's good, because if you've got some basis in it, then that puts you a few steps ahead of the... I mean, a lot of people don't understand about evidence, do they? They don't understand about references. I mean, I've seen...
No, they don't know how to assess truth claims either, and they don't know, I don't know how many people talk about things, and they've absolutely got, they don't even attempt to present any basis or foundation to their beliefs. It's just as if people expect you to believe stuff without providing any kind of evidence. It's a tragedy.
It's sad, isn't it? I think that's part of the US education system in particular. It's just presented to them, and of course it's mimicked by TV and films and all the rest of it.
And it's amazing how popular some of these people are, because they have a lot of followers, and you're thinking, how can that many people believe that? They haven't even attempted it. It's just like they've pulled stuff out of their imagination, talking as if they have authority on something. And it's just whatever. I mean, I suppose that's why the world is in the way it is in the state that's in, because people will believe so much BS so easily.
There are also sort of fake people who... I mean, Dawkins, for example, in my view, is largely a fake. I mean, I'm okay with this evolutionary stuff, but I don't think he's any good on with his group of skeptics, which of course are American, and they don't consider this Jewish stuff at all. So I think he doesn't know about wars. He doesn't know about wars.
Yeah, I don't think he's a particularly impressive thinker, which again is ironic because he's sort of held up.
It's so sad, isn't it? I mean, he's got a professorship of awareness of science, isn't it? Something like that. And he's really kind of amputated part of his own brain, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, I do quite like him, ironically, because he's, you know, he's anti-Christian and all that, but I do find him quite a sort of, I just find him quite a likable chap. He is what he is, and he doesn't, you know, do you know what I mean?
That's part of the, he's like a sort of film star, you know, they're
he's quite sort of likable. Yeah, he is, yeah.
Let me, on that subject, I've got some stuff on my website, which in a way is more important than all this other stuff, which is about science revisionism, and it's another... It's like a can of worms. It's this whole, warehouse full of cans of worms, and there's one here on modern
a total cesspit.
Well, of course, it does pay money. A lot of people go along it because of the money. One of the big intellectual events of my life actually was meeting a chap called Harold Hillman, who's actually a Jew. He's dead now, unfortunately. But he spent his whole life really. Researching into biology and finding all kinds of errors in it, and I've got a long interview. I took him very seriously. For example, things like the endoplasmic reticulum, it's supposed to be a structure in cells. Whenever you see a picture of a cell in people like Dawkins or online or in the Open University or whatever, it's shown as containing a kind of whole complicated, like crunched up tissue paper stuff inside, and that's all a myth. It's all caused by misreading electron micrographs, and there's a lot of stuff like that. The whole basis of it sounds incredible when I say it, but the whole basis of medical science is largely fake. Wherever there's instruments involved of that sort, like electron microscopes.
What about cancer?
I think cancer. I've got an alternative theory on cancer, which I.
Yeah, I've heard a few people say that they could easily cure cancer.
I doubt if it's true. It's very hard to know. And I haven't paid much attention. Let me just give you an alternative view here, though, which is that just salt, ordinary common salt, will act against cancer, because I don't know if you know about hydrochloric acid. Do you know about stomach acid? Probably not. Not your thing. Okay,
no.
Well, the stomach contains hydrochloric acid, which obviously if you eat stuff and you swallow it, if it's got anything in it that's potentially dangerous, the hydrochloric acid has evolved to sort of wipe it out. It's very strong. I mean, it's pH, it used to be pH 1. If you eat salt, the only way you can get chlorine, really, in hydrochloric acid is through eating salt. If you eat more salt than you're used to, it'll increase your stomach acid, and it'll all...
Yeah, I heard that. I remember someone saying that to me, get some salt into you, and I'm thinking, well, my mum's a nurse, and she's always saying, cut down on your salt.
I think it's a phony. But anyway, if you do that, not only will you get hydrochloric acid in your stomach, but the stomach lining works the other way. You get hydroxyl ions, you get more alkalinity in the rest of your body, right? Because if you separate out the acid stuff, what remains is alkaline. It's not as strong, because you've got your whole body to distribute it. But the point is that cancer cells are supposed not to grow within an alkaline environment. That was discovered in the 30s. So if you're
high oxygenated environment as well, I've heard.
I'm uncertain about oxygen. If you eat more salt, that affects the chloride shift, which has a connection with oxygenation, in fact. So if anyone's out there interested in the science thing, go to my main page and go down a few of these horizontal bars, and you'll find salt in food.
Yeah, I've got that. Yeah, it's about halfway down. It's about halfway down in the middle, sort of salt in food.
That's an alternative view. There's also I've got
the myth that salt is harmful. Yeah.
I got that. That's not my idea. It was an Australian suggested it to me, and I checked it out. I don't put stuff up lightly. I checked it through very carefully. Anyway, there's also a thing about modern physics, which includes superfluid helium. God, there are so many of these things. That's another fucking fake. You know, have you heard of superfluid helium? It's supposed to be a special.
No.
If you get helium and you cool it enough, it eventually liquefies and then it changes its phase into what they call a superfluid.
All right, we'll be back in about 3-4 minutes, Ray. I'm your host, Paul Stevenson, and it's an hour and a half gone by. I did say, right, yeah, are you back with me? I did say it goes in very quickly, doesn't it?
Depressingly fast. Well, it's about right, this one, I think.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit, because I know I've heard you talk about this a little bit on some of your shows when I first came across you about 6 months ago, and I find it a fascinating and a bit of a frustrating issue. Ford said it would be impossible for any Gentile coalition under similar circumstances to attain the control which the Jews have won, for the reason that there is a lacking in the Gentile a certain quality of working togetherness, a certain conspiracy of objective, and the adhesiveness of intense raciality which characterizes the Jew. It is nothing to a Gentile that another man is a Gentile. It is next to everything to a Jew that the man at his door is another Jew.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think that's a genetic thing too. I've got a thing online contrasting the genetics of Jews with genetics of whites, which in fact has had the honor of being slightly covered up by YouTube. But YouTube. It's a very good question, and I don't know if it's curable, actually.
I think you're seeing a bit more solidarity between white people at the minute out of necessity, but you generally speak, and maybe it's just complacency, you know, you had it too easy, and then
it could be
circumstances.
It could just be if you're a majority, you don't sort of bother so much, do you?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, or else you're just not complete weirdos like the Jews, who are too ethnocentric, and not everyone else is like that. You
know? Anyway, as I say, I've got a bit about that. By the way, I hope I get the impression, I don't know, that your site likes to have weirdos on. Let me just say that I take this stuff completely seriously. It's all completely serious. If anyone's doubting.
I don't have anybody on my show who's not serious and hasn't got some credentials. I know this, you know. I know a lot of people do interview just total whack jobs. Like back to what I was telling you about, they come out with all sorts of stuff without even attempting to provide any basis for their claim.
I was just going to say that superfluid helium is the finest powder in the universe. If anybody's interested, there's another thing here about would-be science revisionists. This is biographical stuff. It's stuff that I picked up over many years about science people who've tried to do revisionist stuff of their own, and for various reasons they've usually failed. It's a little box there called Would-Be Science Revisionists, 1950 to 2010. That's if you're the son of a scientist, or the daughter of a scientist, or interested in scientists, or for that matter, you know, dating or something, a scientist, that might be worth reading. There's some disagreeable home truths in it, because of the nature of science, really. Although, of course, it applies to literary people as well. I mean, they often can waste their lives on stuff. I just want to make a point here. There's a piece on global warming, which is actually a tape recording I did. It was in my tape recording phase. It dates back as far as 1995. It's absolutely incredible. Over 20 years old. Very good talk by a professor of cloud physics, I think he was. Very good. Includes everything from, you know, volcanoes to computer models, but he concluded it was a phony, and that's worth reading, worth listening to if you want to listen to a video. And there's also another thing which interested me at the time was organophosphate insecticides and BSE, bovine spongiform encephalopathy, where these poor old cows were. Basically, they bunged this stuff on their backs, this very horrifically dangerous insecticide to kill off warble fly, so that the hides would not be damaged, and it made them go mad. That's the short form of it. But the public inquiry was chaired by a Jew, but at the time I was a bit naive. I didn't go through it in great detail. But as with public inquiries by people like Kissinger, from your position, from our position, you know what to expect. It's going to be, if there's anything suspicious there, it'll be elided out. There's another thing here about small particles in air, microparticles. There's a chap called Dick Van Steenis, who was a GP.
You have a science background yourself, don't you?
I retained my interest, and I've got a collection of books. I quite admire people. I mean, for example, I admired H.G. Wells' book on biology, which for its and on history, actually, I thought for their time they were very good. But of course, he was not. He was Jew naive, but I think that kind of thing. People like that who are genuinely interested, you know, do stuff themselves, and are the best model for science writers and historical writers. They're not sort of second-rate people, you know, drafted in to do it, like actors who read out the script and so on. They're the real thing. But in fact, I think my view of a good education would be a solid history thing, a bit like Wells did, and a lot of on science as well, including all the little known bad things, damages, and money making schemes which come with science. Because I think there's an immense amount of science now, for example, in health, is to do with making money. And it's very difficult to see how you can get out of it. There are hundreds of people, vast numbers of people, internationally as well, who make money from these things on a huge scale, and they're not going to all want to give it up. So I can believe these accounts of alternative people getting mysteriously shot. So that is very worrying.
It's worrying.
The point, the way Jews have developed the economy is... it's so much bias towards them. There's so much advantage in going along with them that it's very difficult. If you look at
And it's very hard to criticize people because you know if you've spent a lifetime building up a career and then and you've got family to feed, you know it's hard to risk everything just to come out and tell the truth about the Jews. You know I do have sympathy for people like that because you've got kids and a family to feed.
It's true, and even in subjects which appear to be completely different, like the Shakespeare authorship thing. You know, if you're making money out of a traditional interpretation of Shakespeare where you don't need to know much, you just sort of go through it, people who contradict that get a rough time. I've met someone, I've got a tape recording of a chap who's very good on my YouTubes, and it is very depressing. But it's exactly the same thing. You have an establishment, the same with weather forecasting, actually. They have, in weather forecasting, they don't... I learnt this from a friend of mine about clouds. You know, most people think of clouds as though they're like sailing ships. They're things up in the air which get blown around by the wind. But his idea is they're much more active than that. If a cloud changes its phase, the phase of the water inside it, it might be invisible, for that matter. It causes big changes in the pressure. So, in fact, clouds drive weather rather than the other way around. That's why weather forecasts are so useless. All they do is look at the thing and project it forward without understanding how it works.
Well, I was just about to say, I mean, the only thing I would ever sort of, you know, would tune into BBC for or could trust is the weather, but now you've just destroyed that as well.
Well, sometimes if the sky is completely clear and if they have satellites or planes or whatever, see a clear sky, you can be pretty sure it's going to be clear, but they're not very good. I mean, I've been watching lately. I was painting a shed, in fact, and it wanted 48 hours clear, and the forecasts are rubbish, really. But of course, they do pay these people. They've got these, you know, the Met Office. They've got huge computers, and it's the same, of course, with nukes abroad. If you imagine you're a Pakistani or an Indian, if you go along with this nuke thing, you know, they can get a nice, you know, super modern housing and cars and, you know, documents and all the rest of it, and go on trips around the world having discussions. Or they can go in some village which has been ruined since about 1800, and of course they want to do it. And incidentally, if you look at online or on YouTube or to DVDs, you can see tests. Supposed nuclear tests by China, Pakistan, and India, and they're quite funny actually. They're like it's like a sort of low budget version of the Western ones. You know, cheap special effects and very unimpressive bangs.
What about the moon landing?
I'm afraid I'm very conventional. I think it was a bunch of crap. I didn't know that. That was something I only discovered that in 1999, as a result of Channel 4. They in the 30th anniversary of the so-called moon landing, they had a whole series with going on for consecutive nights showing the supposed process of all this, and then right at the very end at midnight, I think it was, they had I think they called it After Dark. They had about half a dozen people discussing whether it was true, and the most impressive one was a photographer
Yeah, but, and also because, I mean, I think the argument for not going to the moon since is the cost. So, I mean, they could go to the moon in the 60s, but oh, yeah, they can't go now. I mean.
There's plenty of things which are not explored, though. Like, for example, the biology of it. There's a very simple thing. You know, you've got to eat and drink and crap and stuff, and they never discuss that before.
Also, can an engine, you know, is combustion even capable in a vacuum?
That's a good question. I assumed it was on the traditional view that.
But where's the oxygen coming from?
Oh, you'd use an oxygenator. You'd have a mixture of things like hydrogen peroxide or nitrogen oxide. There's no difficulty about doing that on land. The question is whether you could have done it then and whether you could get back. I mean, you've only got a little thing. But the main thing is to do with, in my view, anyway, to do with the human body. You could, in fact, they could have simulated it, although they never did. You could have a vacuum chamber and have a heater corresponding to the sun. So it would simulate being on the moon, and then you'd get these people and watch them try and get out of their capsule and sort of walk around.
This. Yeah, and then you had the flag blowing.
There's a load of stuff. But in my videos, I've got a thing about the moon landing. I think I just called it a fraud. It's in six parts. I think at the time I put it up, they only had YouTube only allowed 10 minutes, and I never put it together. I did follow some of the people through. Most of them were not as impressive as the photographer. Do you know his name? I can't remember his name. Okay.
No,
anyway, so I'm afraid the moon landing. But that, as far as I'm concerned, that was about 1999 that I discovered that. So all these things, you find they can arrange them in sequence, you know. I mean, this PSYOP thing, these little PSYOPs, which I'd include Charlottesville in, are relatively new to me. I hadn't seen them as a sort of syndrome, although when you do, they're in a long tradition, aren't they? The Jews often had all kinds of assassinations, bomb throwing, destruction of stuff. In fact, even I don't know if you know this, even the suffragettes, I only realized recently that the suffragettes were used by Jews.
Well, that makes total
well,
sense,
the,
doesn't it?
What happened was that there were, this was in the run-up to 1914, they wanted to cause people to think that things were unstable, so sort of chucking bombs around is obviously what Jews would do. But I read a book by my Jew, which I reviewed online, in fact, and he said that there were various atrocities, like there was a Glaswegian glass palace kind of building which was blown up, and they looked at it in the rubble, and there was just a sign, a piece of paper, saying "Votes for Women." And so they said, "Oh," but of course there was no evidence. And in fact, the women denied having been there, having caused it, which is credible to me, because I mean, walking around with nitroglycerin and sort of slopping around is not something that a normal woman would do. So I think that was another thing building up, and my opinion is kind of reinforced to some extent by the fact that one of the Pankhursts went around lecturing on the First World War and how everybody should get into the First World War and fight. But of course, if you stop and think about it, what the hell did she know about the First World War? The money, all the costs, all the deaths, right, and everything. So it was a setup. So going back to that, and there were others. There was some in America. There's that famous case with that ship that was blown up. It was a war, I think it was in the Philippines war or something. So these things are, and of course there's the things going for the Second World War too, I'm feeling the 2 hours here. There's Second World War, you know what I'm talking about.
I can't remember.
Fuck was it? The fake thing that started the Second World War against Japan.
Testing
here.
Are you talking
Pearl
about
Harbor.
Pearl Harbor?
Very well, yeah. Well, that's obviously a false flag, wasn't it?
Oh, that's total bullshit.
It is, yeah.
Isn't it?
And in fact, now I come to think of it, there's a lot of stuff vaguely similar relating to the supposed delivery of the atom bomb across Japan. I think I've got a private theory that it was deliberately left to sink, not successfully. It was torpedoed by the Japanese, and their instructions were given to ignore it. It was only by chance that an aeroplane was in the air and it saw this I think it was an aircraft carrier or something sinking with all these blokes in the sea being eaten by sharks, and my impression is that they discovered that the thing was a fake, the nuclear, so-called nuclear bomb was a fake, and they were going to tell people back home. And there's a lot. One of the chaps who worked on the Nuclearized Forum, he's changed his nickname. His nickname was First Class Skeptic. Now he calls himself, I think it's Priesthood Agitator. That's right.
Is he the guy in the US that comes
very
on
good,
sometimes?
Very good chap. He does basically kind of elementary stuff on newspaper research, photographic research.
Yeah. There was another guy you had on. He was a farmer, I think. He was very intelligent. No formal education, from what I could gather. He was just some sort of farmer type in Midwest somewhere. But
no, I don't remember that. I think maybe that's somebody who phoned in. But anyway,
yeah, maybe that was
he's done stuff on that. He's got a YouTube channel, Priesthood Agitator, and he did a lot of stuff on looking through newspapers, which of course are online now. I think they're having second thoughts about that, and I think you find these things may get changed. I mean, some of these black and white films, old films, are being coloured in and generally pissed about with, because they've realised that they've got stuff on there that they would rather not have. And what else can I say?
Anything else?
I was just going to say there's a guided tour. If people there click on this Nuclearized Forum, there are some announcements at the top. The top bar has got announcements, and you can have a guided tour. You can click on it, and there are various things you can click on when you load up the new file. And there's a hell of a lot of stuff that I cannot stress enough, that there's an awful lot there, including, look at this. Oh, here we are, Thousands of Experts Myth. That's on the front page. So is Insane Costs of so-called Nuclear Power. Just have a look and get the feel of it. And even if you're not happy with the treatment, remember this is the real world. This is today's world, and be prepared. Who knows what they're going to come up with next? Remember they started 2 world wars, and there were plenty of other genocides. There's, Vietnam, Korea.
Well, it's big business for the Fed.
It's a lot of money.
They learned that a long time ago. You're going to lend money. You're not going to lend people money to buy a new car. You just lend governments money, and then the media creates the threat, and then it's just.
Works here. It doesn't work. I think in Africa it's slightly different. You get some thug, quotes leader. You give him a few billion, and he goes and buys a fleet of Mercedes and a castle and a few jets, and then the people are supposed to pay up all the money. That's how it works there. Yeah. I feel very despondent about Africa. I mean, it's true that they're trying to genocide whites in South Africa, but really, I don't know of a single African activist or orator who's got a plan for Africa. It's this huge country, and it's got a special, arguably a special sort of racial group to fit it. How the hell can anything be done about that? So that's not a very...
Well, they need to be able to sort it out themselves, really, don't they?
It'd be nice. I just don't think it's likely. And if you've got Jews kind of preying on them all the time...
Yeah, I don't think the blacks are any match for the Jews. I think the Jews have identified the white race are the biggest problem, so they're trying desperately to get rid of them now, because they have been the biggest... there's been a huge enmity with them in history, but everybody else, I think they've found them very easy to manage.
True, yeah. What's your view on China? Do you think China was influenced by... Jews? Do you think Chinese communism was
communism is a Jewish operation, so I mean I think I think big time they're influenced by the Jews, and there's a lot of Chinese Jews as well,
there are. I didn't know that until recently. In fact, they've got their own surnames, haven't they? I think Lee stands for Levy, for example.
But the Chinese are right up there when it comes to IQ and stuff.
I'd give them a good chance of fighting back, but you can't be optimistic, can you, really?
No, because they've got that ideology, that collectivist, communist ideology.
Well, it might work as a kind of super Jew thing.
Repellent, who knows?
Okay.
I think the big problem is not enough people identify them as the enemy. You know, the people we spoke earlier about people saying, "Oh, the U.S. did this, or the British did this, or the our elites did this," or you know, you hear people, you know, Alex Jones and plenty of others calling them globalists. I mean, the Jew is the quintessential globalist because he is a, you know, a gypsy with no fixed abode, and he learned the art of bouncing around the nations and you know, sort of being a globalist.
Yeah, they want
you know?
To be their own interest group plus everybody else as the globe. Yeah.
Yeah, their home was everywhere and nowhere, as Hitler said in one of his famous speeches.
What do you think? Well, they are interbreeding to a larger extent with non-Jews. I know. I suppose there's some optimism there. I don't know.
What do I think of
the future of this Jewish thing? Really, Jews are interbreeding more. I've heard it suggested that if they interbreed more, the Jews will themselves kind of die out.
Well, what is ostensibly the case is the Jews, the level of power they've acquired this time currently is unprecedented. And I personally think that the only thing that's going to match their power this time is the reaction they're going to get this time. Because the same cycle keeps repeating itself. The Jews, and I argued this with Kevin MacDonald, that their aggression outweighs their IQ and intelligence because they can't seem to stop themselves. They can't seem to consolidate what they've got. They just seem to, you're seeing it with the EU at the minute. They push nations to such levels, and they get to the point of total absurdity because of their boldness and the audacity of them, that they usually end up self-destructing, and then people stop being polite out of necessity, and then the reaction comes. That's my view. You know?
Well, I hope you're right. Let's hope that happens. Is that your exit music now?
Yeah, we're done, Ray. But thanks very much for coming on.
Nice
good to speak to you
well.
Finally.
Good, thanks. Well,
all right, take care. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I'll be back on Monday again. So until then, I hope you enjoyed the show. Bye-bye now.